keep going.
I don't think that the listeners know that when we say, let's crack open the memory jar, that we both kind of pause and then simultaneously do our version of what our sound effect is, but just with our mouths. And it's always terrible.
It's great.
It's like we've been doing it since we got the sound effect.
Yes. Yes. It's a Creative Commons sound and I love it. It's literally like a second long and I will do that until the end of time. I'll in fact probably on my deathbed, my last words will be. Rah, 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 rah,
rah. Yeah. My take is it. Rah, 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 rah. But we are not consistent. Like I do it differently every single episode. Yes. And then I don't know why we do that. Cause you just have to like edit that out and put in the audio. So it's just a waste of time.
No, no, it's great because that's when I know when to stop and cut the audio and put the space in for the actual sound effect. No, I do it on purpose every time for a reason. So,
oh well, I was just doing it because I'm ridiculous.
Oh well, it also helps. Yeah, no, we're both ridiculous. Like it's definitely we've entered the memory jar sound effect, the remix version, like version 28 or 50 or something. Like it's. Just it's happening. It's a beat. It's a lifestyle.
Welcome to episode number 91 of the Memory Jar. As always, we're here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Presswood, and with me is my co-host Christian Wright. Christian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Before I get into some questions about cards we're going to talk about, it's hot outside and it's been, I apologize that it's been a while since we've talked to people through the podcast.
Yeah, it's 100 degrees here. And the reason that we haven't talked to people in a while is because we actually recorded this episode a few weeks ago. And then the online service we were using, which we'll go unnamed, had a corrupted file. And so we are redoing it. We're running it back. So hopefully it will be better this time. Better, faster, stronger. We can rebuild it. We have the technology.
Yeah. Daft Punk it, baby.
All right.
Anyway, so I am going to need help reading the flavor text on this card that may have not just come out recently, but it's the most recent set that came out. Can you help me?
Yes, sure. Let me know what the card is.
Sure. I'm putting it in the chat on the interwebs. Ready? Boop, 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 boop.
Yes, I am familiar with this card. I played it in a deck today, and this I had not read the flavor text, and I will give this a shot. All right. Ashnazg Durbataluk, Ashnazg Gimbatul. Ashnazg Thrakatoluk Agburam Ishikribatul. Which I believe translates to one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them.
First off, I'm disregarding our script. That sounded a little bit like Sean Connery and Alec Guinness had a baby. It was fantastic.
And now I'm glad you like that.
Yeah. I wish we could do a whole episode with our bad Scottish accents. That's fantastic. So,
hey, do you know what time Sean Connery gets to Wimbledon?
No idea.
Tennis.
I know the joke and I still like it. Anyway, so that's pretty cool. I think that's from a movie, right?
Yeah, books that were made into movies. We are obviously talking today about Magic supplemental draftable modern legal set, The Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth. Specifically, this is our facts show for the set. And you may be saying, you know, hey guys, this set came out a while ago. What gives? Well, again, we are re-recording the podcast because our audio exploded. But now the nice thing is we have some real experience with the set. We're pretty excited to go ahead and get to it. But before we do that, let's go ahead and crack open the memory jar. All right, this show we have Stronghold Machinist. This is originally an uncommon from Nemesis. It is 2 and a blue for a 1/1 human spell shaper that has blue, tap, and discard a card from your hand. Counter target non-creature spell. So this is a spell shaper. These cards that have abilities that let you discard a card to basically turn them into any number of spells. And this is one of 3 spell shapers that let you turn one of your cards in hand into a counter. The first was actually Diplomatic Escort in Mercadian Masks, which was Just blue and tap a discard to counter a spell or ability that targets a creature, so a lot more narrow. And this one was paired in Nemesis with Stronghold Biologist. Since this is the negate version, Stronghold Biologist was the Essence Scatter. It was blue-blue tap, discard a card to counter target creature spell.
Yes, it was a diptych, or I guess that's the proper word for it. The art for Stronghold Machinist and Stronghold Biologist were key art for the Nemesis set. I remember it was used in advertising at the time, and in the Top Deck, I think that was the Wizards official magazine, and Scry and all that. Yeah, these cards are broken limited. I miss them, but it turns out if you can just cast the same spell over and over, it's not that fun. And like when you can say fog every turn or unsummon every turn, probably not healthy, probably not great.
Yeah, counters are bad enough, but then Dawnstrider fogging and then Waterfront Bouncer bouncing is kind of obnoxious. But could you build a Spell Shaper tribal deck? Like, I guess you would want to draw a lot of cards because all of your creatures have discarding a card to activate them. I guess if you did that, maybe you could play Zerda as a companion.
Yes.
Let's actually look at EDH Rec. It does list Spell Shaper tribal as a thing. Not a lot of decks. Oh, Dami is the most popular commander, which makes sense because you draw up to 7 at the end of every turn.
Yes.
Kind of want to make a Spell Shaper Tubert. Would that be... That's too dumb, right?
You know what? No. No, just go for it. You know, it'll be... There's Spell Shapers in all 5 colors. They all have miserable spells stapled to them. Just go for it. It's great, you know?
Okay, I'm going to make a Spell Shaper Tubert, and I'm going to put in things that give all creatures haste, and it's just going to be the worst. And I'm going to make you play it, so you kind of literally asked for it.
I did. I did ask for this, and I will have to live with my consequences. I think if you think this is going to see a reprint, the odds are quite low. It's just not very fun. It's just not a very fun mechanic. And it also, in something like EDH, it's just marginal because you can only do it, unless you're breaking some fundamental game rules with like Seedborn Muse, you can only do it once a turn. So it's eh. But also the other problem is it would require new art. The originals were done by Therese Nielsen and she's awful. So we can't use her art again. That's it.
Yeah, Persona non grata. So commission some new art. Although they did commission a lot of new art for Commander Masters. So you never know. They could do it.
They could. But will they?
But they shouldn't, because no. Oh my god.
No.
All right, well, let's move on to our main show. And you may be asking, David and Christian, you've never done a fact show for a supplemental set before. Why now?
Technically, we did have a reference episode where we talked with great friend of the show, David Lifer Tilly, about references in Modern Horizons 2, which is super fun, but it wasn't really talking about the facts. But we've avoided it because, A, if we did supplemental sets, we'd be doing a set review like every 6 weeks. That's tiring. That's boring. We want to do something different once in a while. And since they also don't go into standard, they kind of feel outside a regular Magic set for most of Magic's history. Like, in some years, this would be Conspiracy, for example. In some years, this would be a remastered set, right? Although we just had another remastered set. So, like, it's just weird.
Sure.
We just feel weird about it.
Yeah, this one is a little different because it is kind of the summer set. It's not really a supplemental product, even though it's a straight to modern set. And we weren't going to do one anyway. But when I was at the pre-release, 3 different people asked me if we were doing one and all said that we should. So shout out to the pre-release crew at Lodestone Coffee and Games. That is why you are getting this show. So it's a Lord of the Rings. Let's get into it.
Yes. Let's just talk some big picture questions. If you don't know the story of the Lord of the Rings, there's some movies you could watch or read the books. They're great. The first thing I'd like to ask is, what do we like about the translation from the books to the set?
I think it's hard for me to say a ton about that because I read the books once and I've seen the Peter Jackson movies a bunch of times. So remembering what was in the books and what wasn't is kind of difficult. I think if this was a set based on The Hobbit, which I just read to my son, I would be a little better off. I think the thing that really stood out to me is they really did capture a lot of the flavor. I'll give you an example. Certain characters and their relationship to the ring. So there are cards that will give you a bonus if you choose ring bearers other than them when you do the tempting the ring thing. So Aragorn is one of those, and because Aragorn wouldn't take the ring. So you have to make someone else the ring bearer. Galadriel is one because she knew she shouldn't take the ring. And so you get a bonus. And then Faramir gives you a bonus if you choose someone else, because he was the one who is not tempted by the ring. And so all of those characters who kind of let the ring pass through them give you a bonus for having a different ring bearer.
And that is really cool. I really like that. The nice little flavorful touches they added. I like that they capture the setting very well. And they, Mark Rosewater talked about it in one of his articles. They really tried to appeal to a cross-section of fans, from the people who've never maybe seen Lord of the Rings or know very little about it, to like the diehards. And there are some great deep cuts, and you really do get the world of Middle Earth.
So let's reverse that. What do we not like about the translation from the books to this set?
I still think this, even after playing it for a bit, the mechanics just aren't really well done still. The temp the ring is weird, and the ring mechanic is still weird, and it does require a lot of tracking. We've actually played this in person with people who have like the commander decks, and It is tough to track, and it's something you have to remember every combat. And yeah, it's easy on digital magic stuff, but it's just still hard in paper. And yeah, a mass is fine, but like, I just feel like it's just a mechanic. It doesn't really capture the flavor of an army, but it's their best shot at it. So it's all right. I like that they now have a mass for different creatures, but again, it's just kind of weird to have one big creature versus a go wide army, which is what you think of when you think of a large army of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I kind of came into the set thinking that Tempted by the Ring should have a more clear downside, but I've kind of come around. I still don't think it's a flavor win, but it plays well enough that I've kind of lost my edge on that. Mm-hmm. And I have seen someone mill themselves out because they didn't realize that the loot effect and the second phase of Tempted by the Ring is not optional. So they just kept looting their entire deck into the graveyard. Mm-hmm. I actually like a mass for the orc army thing. I wonder if it would be more interesting if there was also like an amassed soldiers or something in the set. So you got to feel like there's each side is building up some huge army, like all the human soldiers and the elf soldiers fight against the orcs. But it has ended up playing pretty well. I don't know. I think that it's for the most part a flavor win. And there are a lot of interactions in the set between cards that make for flavorful gameplay if you are a big Tolkien nerd.
Do you like the cards themselves? Now that it's been out a little longer, we could talk about it. We're not just getting our immediate take. How do you like the actual cards, both in whatever, you know, you play a lot of limited, you want to build cubes, you know, you play commander. Do you feel like you want to play with a lot of these cards? I guess outside of limited, the limited format's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, I do really like the limited format. I have been playing a lot of that. I'll just say, I think that the color balance is kind of a challenge. Like black is incredibly deep. And green is fairly unplayable, like not quite Battle for Zendikar levels, but like you don't see me putting green cards in my decks. And I have been winning like crazy, like to the tune of like 72% on Arena. So I just am farming gems from all of the listeners out there. Sorry about that. I really like that. As far as cube, I have not really found any of these cards that I'm really juiced up to put into cube. There are a couple that are maybe a little better than existing cards, but like I don't want to have one copy of a card that says the ring tempts you in a cube. You know, I think that would need a larger theme. There are some for commander that I think have made a lot of sense. We played my Gave deck recently, and I added Rosie Cotton and Mirkwood Bats because they care about tokens, and those Mirkwood Bats won me a game. So I think that there are some places to fit it in there, but not particularly. Mm-hmm. I'm also not building new decks, so I think there are some options for new and interesting decks that people will try out, but I'm not there on that.
Yeah, I'm just a little surprised at how many cards are breaking through to constructed formats and to eternal formats. Like, the One Ring is busted. Like, seeing that in action and playing it a little bit is insane. Obviously, some of the cards, like Orcish Bowmasters, have been making an impact as well. The one I'm really surprised about, and the reason I wanted to ask you this question, is because the Land Cycler cycle, which is the one where you have the different spells or creatures, but they all have like land cycle one. I didn't realize until 2 weeks ago that also gets dual lands. And now it's like, maybe I should have these in like every EDH deck. These seem like just fantastic cards to fix your mana, and it's insane. So I was just shocked at how much better these played than when we initially maybe read the spoiler and we're recording this initially.
Oh, I think the first time around, we talked about how one mana land cyclers are cracked, and I think that's definitely still true. I'm not going to go running and putting them in commander decks, but they are certainly very good. As long as we're kind of starting there, why don't we get into talking about some of the cards? Let's talk first about signature reprints. And I would argue there are actual, factual zero signature reprints. There's only two outside of the basic lands, and they are pretty meaningless. There were also a bunch of commons that were kind of reskinned for this set. So there are a lot of cards that are familiar that we've seen with different names. Like there's a common Willow Wind that's 4 and a blue for a 3/4 flying creature that has Scry 2 when it enters. Well, that's just Cloud Reader Sphinx from Dominaria. And there's a bunch of instances of things like that that are skinned over for Lord of the Rings, which totally fine. No harm in having two different versions of that.
Nope. So let's talk about our favorite topic, which is cards that got obsoleted.
It's always obsoleted.
So this isn't about which card is strictly better. It's about which cards make older cards completely obsolete. That means a new card has to completely replace the old card. It has to be the same color, same cost or cheaper, and have the same or a better effect. And we're really talking about cards that newly make a card obsolete. Like Windrake is obsolete already. So is every Shock variant, because Lightning Bolt trumps them all. You know, we don't need to mention it when they print a better one in every set where they might trump an old card that has already been obsolete. Also, there may be some corner cases related to creature type or turning presumably negative effects like losing life into a positive, but we're not looking for the tiniest of corner cases. We're looking for the real deals. So why don't you start us off with the first card that got obsoleted?
Sure. So Captain of Umbar obsoletes Teferi's Protege. Captain of Umbar is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 human pirate that has one tap, draw a card, and then discard a card. Teferi's Protege from Core Set 2021 is the same thing, except it's 1 and a blue, draw a card, and discard a card. So Captain of Umbar, a better version, kind of a bigger body than you would want for a looter. No one's going to play this over Merfolk Looter, but hey, see you later, Teferi's Protege.
Bye. So next we have Entish Restoration, obsoletes Roiling Regrowth. Entish Restoration is 2 and a green for an instant, sacrifice a land, search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tap, then shuffle. If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, instead search your library for up to 3 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. This obsoletes Roiling Regrowth, because Roiling Regrowth can only find 2 cards. It doesn't have the cool quasi-ferocious trigger added to it.
Yes, now that is a good commander card.
Yes.
Next is Fire of Orthanc, which obsoletes Tectonic Rift. Fire of Orthanc is 3 and a red for a sorcery. Destroy target artifact or land. Creatures without flying can't block this turn. Tectonic Rift could not destroy artifacts. It was just lands. So probably a bigger slap in the face, but both unplayable in limited either way.
Yes. You know, we're not crying tears that they got obsoleted. Glorious Gale obsoletes Essence Scatter, False Summoning, Preemptive Strike, and Rove Soul. Basically, every previously printed 1 and a blue counter target creature spell. The reason why Glorious Gale obsoletes all these is, we just said it, it's 1 and a blue for an instant counter target creature spell, except Glorious Gale has some extra text that says, if it was a legendary spell, the ring tempts you. So this is not a corner case in a lot of Magic now. So it does some stuff, does more stuff.
Yeah. The next is Golem's Bite, which shockingly obsoletes Disfigure. Golem's Bite is black for an instant. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. You can also pay 3 and a black and exile it from your graveyard to have the ring tempt you. You can only do that as a sorcery. Disfigure doesn't have any of that ring tempting text. Disfigure, long a very good and playable card since it was first printed in Zendikar. And yeah, it's out the door.
It's not going to go into the door of my cube decks. You know what? That was a bad joke. Moving on. Pelagir Survivor basically obsoletes Vodalian Arcanist. So Pelagir Survivor is 1 and a blue for a 1/3 human peasant. It has tap, add 1 mana of any color. Spend this mana only to cast an instant or sorcery spell. It also has 5 and a blue tap. Target player mills 3 cards. The reason this obsoletes Vodalian Arcanist is because Vodalian Arcanist can only add a colorless mana to spend to cast instant or sorcery spell, and it doesn't have that cool additional mill ability. But
yeah, so this is one of those corner cases that we say we aren't really concerned with, but it's kind of backwards. Like, it doesn't technically obsolete Vodalian Arcanist, because if you have exactly Spatial Contortion or Warping Whale in your deck, you would rather have Vodalian Arcanist, because those are the only two instants or sorceries in Magic history that require colorless mana to cast. So in every other case, Pelargir Survivor is better. So I'm still throwing away Vodalian Arcanist. We don't need those.
It's bad.
Next one is Rally at the Hornburg. One and a red for a sorcery. Create 2/1/1 white human soldier creature tokens. Humans you control gain haste until end of turn. This obsoletes Dragon Fodder, Krenko's Command, and Rawl's Reinforcements, which just make 2/1/1 tokens, but does not give their types haste. People are still going to play Dragon Fodder and Krenko's Command because making two goblins can be important, but this is just a better version of the effect.
Yeah, also there's bajillion copies everywhere, so whatever. Next we got Rising of the Day, obsolete Fervor. Rising of the Day is 2 red for an enchantment. Creatures you control have haste, and legendary creatures you control get +1/+0. Fervor is 2 red, just gives creatures haste. So Rising of the Day is technically better.
Yeah, if I wanted to make creatures haste, we'll have a better version. Surprising to see that every time there's a card from, like, Fervor is from Weatherlight and had not been made obsolete until this point. So always nice to see the old ones lose their time in the sun. The next one is Shelob's Ambush. Black for an instant. Target creature gets +1/+2 and gains death touch until end of turn. Create a food token. This obsoletes Coat with Venom, which does the same thing except not food. And turns out to be a very playable card, as I recall Coat with Venom not being in its original set, Dragons of Tarkir.
Yes. We have Shire Terrace. It obsoletes Warped Landscape. So Shire Terrace is a land that taps for 1 colorless, and it has 1 generic, tap, sacrifice Shire Terrace, search your library for a basic land card, put onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle. This is better than Warped Landscape because Warped Landscape costs 2. So you'll never have to play Warped Landscape ever again. Done. Get it out of here.
And I didn't before, so problem solved. Finally, Shower of Arrows, 2 green for an instant. Destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying and scry 1. This obsoletes a card that has had multiple standard set reprints since originally printed in Zendikar Rising, Broken Wings, which does the same thing except for not a scry. So, not bad.
Not bad. Yeah.
Well, let's go on to some unique things that happened in the set. We are going to talk about some new, cool, unique, interesting things. These aren't necessarily consistent from fact show to fact show, but we want to highlight some of this stuff that's just kind of interesting. So I'll kick us off. The first thing is, hey, halflings have entered the chat. Previously, these have only been in the Dungeons & Dragons set, but here they represent hobbits.
Yes, more hobbits. Hobbitsies are now in the fold. Great job, hobbits. We have our first nightmare elf. Wild. Never had a nightmare elf before.
Haunt of the Dead Marshes, and that is a nightmare-looking elf. We also have a lot of Avatar wizards in every Gandalf, every Radagast, and every Saruman, but this was not the first Avatar wizard. And you found this one in your search. This is fascinating. Nameless One, which is a morph from Onslaught, was an Avatar wizard. Its power and toughness are equal to the number of wizards in play. So you can pay 4 mana for your 1/1 if you're not playing Wizard Tribal. Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah. We got technically 4, but we have our first Avatar Horror. There's a lot of avatars, but we have a bunch of new Avatar Horrors thanks to Sauron. He is an Avatar Horror in every single copy. So
yeah. 3 in the set, 1 in the commander set. Is that right?
Yes.
We have our second Orc Archer in Orcish Bowmasters. I was surprised that the first one, Orc Sure Shot from Fate Reforged, was also black. I just feel like an Orc Archer, it's surprising that it's not red. Also, it's weird that these don't have reach. I realize that they both kind of ping creatures, but I don't know. Archers have reach. That's like their whole thing.
Yes. Although now, with a little more time under a belt, if Orcish Bowmasters also had reach, it's pretty messed up.
That would be that would be unnecessary. Agreed.
Unnecessary. Yes. We have our first Spider Demon.
Yeah!
It is Shelob, Child of Ungoliant. Shelob was a minor character in the story, but had the coolest scene in the movies, in my opinion. So
she is real nasty in the movies and in the set. Finally, we have our first ever God Bard in Tom Bombadil. And I'm not going to talk any more about Tom Bombadil because he was the worst part of the books that almost made me quit reading when I was reading The Fellowship of the Ring.
Every time I got to a section of the books where the song went for more than two pages, I skip that part. So I've never read his song. I've never read, like, Mary has like a 5-page song in Gondor, and you're like, I don't have time for this. This must be really sad, but whatever. So
yeah, leaving him out of the movies was the thing that made the movies palatable for sure.
Well, we have a lot of cool firsts and other stuff. We got our second nymph in a non-Theros set, which is wild. You know, nymphs have been in Theros a lot, but what was the first nymph that was not in a non-Theros set?
The first nymph outside of Theros?
Mm-hmm.
Is it from Alpha?
Yes.
Oh! Shinoden Dryads.
Yes!
Yes! I was thinking about that card recently because I inexplicably have a slabbed unlimited copy of it that some company who puts cards in slabs gave me at in Vegas. So that's a shock. This one, by the way, is Goldberry River Daughter, and I'm not going to say anything more about that because she's Tom Bombadil's wife, and so it's just get out of here. Long List of the Ents is our first saga with 6 stages. The previous record was 4, held by Metamize Prophecy, The Triumph of Anax, and the first Iroan games, all from Theros Beyond Death. Long List of the Ents costs a single green, and all 6 levels are the same. It says, note a creature type that hasn't been noted for Long List of the Ents. When you cast your next creature spell of that type this turn, that creature enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. I played this in a game of Limited. The first 3 types I named in order were Brushwag, Org, and Eldrazi, because I didn't have creatures. But then I got to name like Elephant and Elf and a couple of other things. And yeah, it worked out just fine. And then I took it out of the deck after that game.
It's still a great joke, but that's fine.
Always, whenever I have to name anything on Arena, if I don't have it, it's always Brushwag.
Yes. We have the first card that enters the battlefield with stun counters on it. That is Watcher in the Water. It is a mythic, and yes, you have a way to remove stun counters off of Watcher in the Water. But it's cool. It's nice little design space. They're finally adding like flavorful and possibly other reasons to give a, you know, balance creatures around keeping them tapped for more than a turn. So it's pretty cool.
I haven't researched this, but I'm also guessing it's the first card that comes with 9 stun counters.
Oh, I think that's,
I think we know that it is. Yeah.
But we'll see.
Isildur's Fateful Strike is our first legendary instant. You may remember that we had a cycle +1 because there was a black-white one of legendary sorceries in Dominaria, and you can only cast these spells if you have a legendary creature or planeswalker in play.
Yes, very cool. I'm glad. I hope we see more legendary spells in general that are not just creatures or artifacts or permanents. The number of wraiths in Magic has increased by over 50% thanks to the set. We've now gone from 7 wraiths to 11. I'm glad the wraith representation is lifting all boats.
It's pretty wild that we did not have many wraiths before, considering that Bog Wraith was an Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of abandoned the type after that.
Yeah.
We also have a fun power toughness combo. Fangorn Tree Shepherd is the first ever 410.
Real question.
You know them.
You get the first 420.
Wow. It'll probably be green. That's all I know.
I'm sorry.
If you're not, if that, you know, I've got nothing for that joke. This is already a tree. So it would have to be a tree.
It would have to be.
All right. Stony Stonerson.
Okay.
Let's talk about old creature errata. There's one errata, and that is Amass, now being templated as Amass creature type N instead of just Amass N and creating a zombie army by default. So that's because there are orcs in this set. And indeed, since the first time we recorded this episode, we've seen Amass slivers in Commander Master. So that is a design space that is being explored.
I was kind of surprised we would see a new Amass so quickly. I thought it would be like a year or two, because that's usually the case when they find some new way to do things. It takes a little bit of time for them to like propagate it and get it into future sets. But this was really quick, so they must have landed on this pretty quickly. So,
I mean, one off in a commander deck's pretty easy to do, I think.
Let us have this. we have the first ever blue Human Ranger. Before this, Human Rangers were mostly Naya colors, but no, with the Rangers of Ithilien, we have our first blue Human Ranger. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Three unique tokens in this set. First, Smaug, the gold hoarding dragon from The Hobbit, made by the card There and Back Again, which I'm not going to talk about now because I will be talking about it later.
We have a ballistic boulder that was created from Mordor Trebuchet. I don't want to say both those words fast. So, but it's nice because the token is created when you attack with a goblin or orc, and the flavor is basically they're throwing a goblin or orc on a rock and it flies and it kills things. It's great. Love it.
Yeah, I love that the token is a construct because it's really about being the rock, but it just has to have the goblins and orcs on top of it. And then finally, Orc Army, we've already discussed, is a brand new token. Let's do the counter roundup. First, we have influence counters on Palantir of Orthanc. That is a brand new counter type.
Yes. Good to have some influence, right? We have hope counters, which I am shocked hope counters have not been a thing before this set. It's wild, but that's on Dawn of a New Age, where you remove them. So, kind of weird.
The first time I read this card, where it says, at the beginning of your end step, you remove a hope counter from Dawn of a New Age. If you do, draw a card. Then if Dawn of a New Age has no hope counters on it, sacrifice it and you gain 4 life. And I was like, what's a no hope counter? But then I figured out what my mistake had been. Hey, verse counters are on Lost Isle Calling. We haven't seen verse counters for 4 years, last seen on Aria of Flame, but these are close to my heart because I love Yisan the Wanderer Bard.
Yes.
Gets verse counters. Just a very rare type.
Yes. And then now that we're taking our second shot at the show, you probably are very familiar with burden counters on the One Ring. Have to have a way to track your life loss, and they figured it out.
Yeah, the One Ring, really, we did not know that was going to blow up so big. I remember when you, before the last episode, texted me and you're like, hey, the One Ring's like going to be expensive. It's like almost $30. Pick them up now if you need them. And I was like, oh, yeah, it seems like it'll be nice. And now they've gone up. They've come back down to about 50. My understanding is that there will be additional printings of bundles. So the bundle versions will be out in the wild. But yeah, the One Ring is very, very powerful. Quite a burden on various formats.
And we'll talk about the One Ring more before we go too. So
let's talk about special frames and what we think about them. As always, the extended arts from the collector boosters are always great and we love them. The showcase cards, first of all, there are 31 of these. They're basically borderless. They have the One Ring text in a circle. These are super cool. The foils look awesome. I thought the art would look too small, but it actually turns out to be super, super neat.
Yes, since we've recorded this, I like him even more. Listeners, I have put Tom Bombadil in my glasses on my forehead. It looks beautiful. It's on my desk, so I have to sleeve it for an EDH deck, and it is amazing. So,
a little liar's poker with Tom Bombadil happening on the podcast.
There's
a showcase version of Denethor Ruling Steward that I don't understand if that's from something unique. It doesn't say that it is. It's different than all of the other ones. It's like a very strange frame that looks like a non-frame. So listeners, if you know what the deal is with this, feel free to let us know.
Yeah. And there's also no copies of it on TCG Player. So I don't know where this came from. No idea. So we have the scene cards. So Wizards decided to take different scenes in the books themselves and make little murals. However you like to, these unified murals across multiple cards. Different scenes. We have the Hobbit party in Hobbiton at the beginning of Lord of the Fellowship of the Ring. The second one scene is Gandalf fighting the Balrog in Moria. We have the battle at, they're really cool scenes from the books. I can't remember all of them right now. I think they're really cool because you build out this mural and it's something you want to hang on the wall. And I have a feeling that if I want to actually do this, I should buy these sooner rather than later before they get very expensive and they stop printing these cards in collector boosters.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to try to collect these and frame them, and I'm guessing that's what Wizards is banking on. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about the One Ring itself, the One of One. We saw that it was opened somewhere in Canada. I didn't open it, but then I opened zero collector boosters. And so no shock there. So now that that's all done, what do we think about the one of one Magic card?
I hope they don't do it again. That's my
They're definitely going to do it again. Which is this is like the flavorful thing to do it, but they're definitely going to do it. I think they're going to do extreme, you know, they've already done the limited versions of, you know, out of 500. I'm sure they will do some kind of a super premium version. Maybe they'll do a set where there's like exactly a one of one of each card in the set. Who knows?
It feels like comic books in the early 90s and like baseball cards in the 90s, where they're trying to do these ridiculously ultra rare versions of all this different stuff. And it's hard to track. And it was interesting this one time. I hope it doesn't become a regular thing.
We shall see. All right. On to some fun stuff. Let's talk about the Secret Reach card. So recent sets have featured creatures that for some reason nobody noticed have reach and just attack their little flyers right into. For example, War Historian from March of the Machine and Skyscythe Invoker from Phyrexia all will be one. For this set, for me, it's Legolas Counter of Kills. I did it right away in my first draft online. And that's because cards with blue in them almost never have reach. And by that, I mean this is literally the third one ever after Vile Spawn Spider and Harbor Guardian. Harbor Guardian way back from Mirage, and that was blue white and had reach for some reason.
Yes, I'm insane. I played against Legolas Counter of Kills at least twice, and I forgot every single time he had reach. It's just something about the card, it hides it.
Yeah, best tongue twister, inspired by our favorite Magic tongue twister, Click Slither Quick Sliver. We're not going to go through a bunch of them. I'm just going to tell you that it is Grishnok Brash Instigator, which I just said in a Sean Connery voice because I slushed through. The S in Instigator, it's not an easy one, folks. Give it a try.
No, don't give it a try. It is Grishnok Brash. Yeah, no, it's no Grish. No, it's that one.
We're gonna do a new segment on this one. I think we'll carry this over to the regular fact shows. We're gonna talk about the best flavor text. So, what italicized text is the best in the set? Christian, kick us off.
Yes, I chose Stern Scolding. The card itself is one blue, counter target creature spell with power or toughness two or less. Pretty good card, but the flavor text has one of my favorite moments in the movies and the books. It is Gandalf. I'm not going to pretend I can speak like Ian McKellen, but I have Ian McKellen's voice in my head. Fool of a Took, this is a serious journey, not a hobbit walking party. Throw yourself in next time and then you'll be no further nuisance. Now be quiet. It's from there in Moria. It's really cool.
Yep.
I like it. Yeah.
Yep. I like Slip on the Ring, which is one and a white for an instant where you exile a creature you own, return it to the battlefield under your control, and the ring tempts you. And the flavor text is, how had it come to be on his finger? He wondered if the ring itself had not played him a trick, which just kind of captures the mischievousness of the ring in his whole scenario. On the movie front, I do have to give an honorable mention to Faramir Field Commander, but only because this line, the way it was delivered by David Wenham in the movie, was phenomenal. It's the way he says quality for me. It's a chance for Faramir, Captain of Gondor, to show his quality. Just like he says it weird in the movie and I like it. It's a brainworm for me.
Do we have any flavor texts we dislike?
There's a dishonorable mention to Bombadil's song. And I'm not even going to read it. It's nope. Just like, I remember this part of the book and being like, what is this? This is the most beloved fantasy book of all time. I was definitely not a fan, which I know is sacrilege to true ringheads or whatever Tolkien nuts are called. But it's just like a bunch of Bombadil song nonsense, and I hate it.
Hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Hate it. I mentioned earlier how I skipped this when I first read it. I will still skip it. I'm glad it does not. It only exists in the books, and even then I pretend it doesn't.
All right, let's take on our suggestion from our listener, Camilla, who said it would be fun to hear something like a common and uncommon and a rare we think are well-designed, exemplify the set, or excite us in one way or another. For me, my common is Troll of Khazad-dûm. This is 5 and a black for a 6/5 troll at common. It has Troll of Khazad-dûm can't be blocked except by 3 or more creatures, and it has swamp cycling for 1. So you could pay 1, discard it to put a swamp from your library into your hand. We already mentioned 1-mana land cyclers are totally cracked. This is also a 6-mana 6/5 with Super Menace, which is a very big problem. These cards are also incredible with reanimation spells like Rise of the Witch King. There's a bunch of them. I could have easily picked that card as my uncommon because I love it, but especially because of these combinations.
Yes. I chose Mordor Muster. Mordor Muster is 1 and a black for a sorcery. You draw a card and lose one life, and you amass orcs one. It's Black Elvish Visionary, and I like Black Elvish Visionary, and I could play three or four of these in the limited deck easily. Love them.
Yeah, big fan. How about your uncommon?
I'm going to choose Rosie Cotton of South Lane. She is 2 and a white for a 1/1 legendary halfling peasant. When she enters the battlefield, you create a food token. And when you create a token, put a +1/+1 counter on a target creature you control other than Rosie. She just synergizes a lot in the set. She's really cool. She does a lot of broken stuff with +1/+1 counters. And she's neat. I like it.
Yeah, she had seemed super powerful. And I have been avoiding green-white in draft because I just think that it's not a great deck. But she fits really well into a red-white deck that's making a lot of human tokens. They do not have to be food, my friend.
They don't have to be food.
For me, it's definitely Nazgul. This has gotten talked about a lot because all of these are expensive. Everything about this is great. It's 2 and a black for a 1/2 Wraith Knight with Death Touch. When it enters the battlefield, the ring tempts you. Whenever the ring tempts you, you put a +1/+1 counter on each Wraith you control. And a deck can have up to 9 cards named Nazgul. So, look, it's a 1/2 Death Touch for 3, which I would probably play because I love Death Touch. It enters, immediately becomes a 2/3, and 2/3 Death Touch for 3 is a good deal. It's got 9 different arts at Uncommon. We're going full Fallen Empires. The difference is people actually want the different arts of these because they want to collect all 9. And I also find cards like this and like 7 Dwarves all hilarious because, like, if you could somehow get 10 of these in your limited draft, you couldn't play them. It actually serves as a limitation on that, not a bonus. I want to know who's out there playing 9 of these in Commander.
Ugh. I kind of want to now, but all those alternate art Nazguls are ridiculous. Like, it's super, super fun. What about rare? What's your rare / mythic?
Easy one for me. It's There and Back Again, which we mentioned earlier. It's a saga that this flavor is perfect, and I'll just run through it as I read the card here. It's 3 red for the saga. The first level is up to 1 target creature can't block for as long as you control There and Back Again. The ring tempts you. So this is Bilbo going through Gollum's cave, finding the ring. Gollum can't find him. He escapes. The second one is search your library for a mountain card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. This is Bilbo and his adventuring party reaching the Lonely Mountain. So you get to get a mountain. The third is create Smaug, a legendary 6/6 red dragon creature token with flying, haste, and when this creature dies, create 14 creature tokens. Smaug's guarding the treasure. When he dies, the party gets to split their 14 shares of treasure, which is hilarious and amazing. Also, I have won with this in limited with Mirkwood Bats by sacrificing my own Smaug, creating 14 treasure tokens, which deals 14 to your opponent, and then you can sacrifice treasure tokens to do the rest of the damage, which is like, you know, creating the Smaug and the treasure tokens and then sacrificing them is like, take 29, bro. What a little nice little combo. What's your rare?
So I'm going to go with a different one than what I picked originally. I'm going to pick this card I keep putting in my glasses, Tom Bombadil, because I didn't realize this until I started building this deck that this is just a 5-color enchantress commander, and it's fantastic. So I'm going to read Tom Bombadil in case you don't know what it is, listeners. It is Wooburg, that's right, all 5 colors, for a 4/4 legendary Godbard. Godbard! We talked about Godbards earlier. As long as there are 4 more lore counters among sagas you control, Tom Bombadil has Hexproof and Indestructible. Whenever the final chapter ability of a saga you control resolves, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a saga card. Put the card into the battlefield and the rest in the bottom of your library in random order. This ability only triggers once a turn. It's just a cool saga commander card. It gives me an excuse to play all those sagas that I've opened and don't know what to do with.
I do like sagas. That will be obnoxious for you to track, but I'm definitely looking forward to playing against this deck.
Sagas. I have 30 sagas last I checked. I might need to cut a few, but 25.
Saga.com. Do the whole thing. Love
saga.
It.
Saga.com. I wonder if that's taken. And maybe that's what they should have named Twitter instead of X. I don't know.
Oh, good. That's a whole thing. All right. Well, that kind of wraps up our Lord of the Rings stuff. Before we go, I do want to note Wizards again put cards in pre-release packs that can't be played at the pre-release. This time it was some of those full art scene cards that had a pre-release stamp on them. We talked about this with Mom, and I think the conclusion has to be, if they're going to do this, they need to put that promo in a separate thing in the pre-release kit that says, like, do not play this, or, like, you know, can't go in your deck, just something.
Yeah, or put it in a different color wrapper. That can be done too.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I'm with you. It's, I hope they're probably going to do it again. Hope they learn their lesson, but it's still very annoying.
Yeah.
Our next, before we go, I thought we should rank the Lord of the Rings movies and see what our list looks like. So why don't you start with your Lord of the Rings movies ranked?
I want to hear yours first.
Okay. So, first is Return of the King. Solid. Mm-hmm. Second is Fellowship of the Ring. Mm-hmm. Third is Two Towers.
Okay.
Fourth is the Bankin Rask animated movie.
Yep.
Fifth is a supercut of the three Hobbit movies that makes them into one movie, because that would actually be a good movie, I think. Six is reading Tom Bombadil's song. I've actually never seen the Hobbit films, but I hate the fact that they took The Hobbit and turned into three films. I think it's just a stupid idea. It was a stupid idea and always will be. And they padded it with a bunch of nonsense. So
it was overkill. So my rankings are similar to yours. We talked about this the first time. It's Return of the King, The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, the animated movie. And then I proposed this hypothetical supercut of the three Hobbit movies that I'm not going beyond that. I will never watch the Hobbit movies again, but I do think there could be a movie in there.
Yeah, you can easily just do the whole journey to Lonely Mountain and what happens with Smaug as a movie. Like, don't get me started.
So let's just say we agree on those. So those are our official rankings. Return of the King, yes. The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, the Bankin Rask animated movie, and then this hypothetical supercut of The Hobbit, which someone should make us and send to us.
Yes, absolutely. I'd watch that. I would watch it in a heartbeat. Third, before we go, unprecedented.
Oh.
Like, long list of the ends, we got to add some stuff to before we go. The Pro Tour is this weekend. It is modern. It is the first major tournament. Well, not really, but it's the first official major tournament with the Lord of the Rings set legal for it. How many copies of the One Ring do you think will be in the top eight?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that the Pro Tour is modern, because I was going to ask what format it was.
Yes.
Top eight, I'm going to say 12, because that would be three decks with four copies.
I am going to say 24.
Woof.
Yes.
Yeah, you know better than I do. I have not followed what this thing is doing in Modern, other than people are annoyed about it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good. It's like Yawgmoth's Bargain, but slower. Like, they ban that card a lot. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Sick. All right. Well, we will find out. Listeners will already know. Listeners, speaking of y'all, thanks for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter, on X, at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. If I get a Blue Sky invite, I guess we'll just move, because this is becoming ridiculous. We would love your feedback anyway. So send us a message there and tell us what cards you want to remember.
Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. We think you can find Chris on Twitter/X, whatever, at CMY Company. That's Company with a K. And until next time, may you take the first step out of your door so you can go on the journey you deserve. Have a fantastic time.